preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do.
You are listening to the Trump Phenomenon. And I'll tell you, there is one people in the world more than any other that can survive and can make do, and that is our cousins in South Africa, who are represented on our show tonight by the very distinguished Simon Roach, who is with us right now. Simon, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me, James.
And my reference there, of course, you know what I'm talking about, Simon, and most patriots in America are familiar with this also. Our South African cousins have at various times in their history, they have had to make do against impossible odds. For example, in the not too distant past, the countries like our own, sadly, were boycotting South Africa. And trying to strangle the economy. Now, we are patriots, we're not guilty of this, but our governments certainly were strangling South Africa. And this was a very big part leading up to the 1994 vote in which white South Africa made a colossal blunder of taking the chance, taking the risk that by sharing power with an overwhelming black and non-white majority, that they could somehow, that justice and fairness and decency and peace would continue in South Africa. But one of the reasons I think, Simon, you might address this, our country and Britain and Europe had been pounding so hard on your country, it must have made for a feeling of desperation. Was that the case?
Yes, that was very much the case, and I must say that I'm one of those people who at that time, I was young then, but I was of majority age, I was one of those people who believed that the right answer was to go with the flow, you know, to support the transition to black rule, because it was nothing else was really tenable. You know, we were being strangled to death, and it seemed as if perhaps things would get better if we obeyed the voice of the mainstream media.
Yes, and of course, you know, unfortunately, you got suckered into that deal, and we how can we apologize? You know, one way we can make some kind of an apology, folks, is to help our cousins now that things have turned out the way that they predictably were going to turn out, which is that as a minority in their own country that they themselves built. And let me tell you, South Africa, you know, we'll just be able to touch upon these subjects, but over the weeks and months, we'll build a stronger picture. The South African people built their own country. And they, but in any event, they, as a minority, in their own country now, of course, they are being treated very, very badly, brutally. In fact, genocide is not an exaggerative word. As even-handed a judge of this as Gregory Stanton, who is the head of Genocide Watch, which is a liberal organization. He has made it clear that white South Africans are the victims. He has identified them. They are the victims of genocide now in the next to last stage of genocide, as described by him in his own most detailed description of what constitutes genocide. The next to last stage, the next stage, the last stage is simply extermination. People actually just being gunned down in the street, rounded up, total police state, invasion of homes, etc. Our South African cousins are one stage away from this. And the we are so fortunate that you, Simon, and your comrades have done such a great job in South Africa of organizing something called Suidlanders.org. And I'm sure I'm messing up the pronunciation. So, Simon, give us the correct Afrikaans pronunciation of Suidlanders.org.
Suidlanders. Suidlanders.
Let me give it a try. Tell me if I get a C, at least a C grade. Suidlanders.
Yeah, that's perfect. That's absolutely perfect.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, I'll probably only be able to do it that way once. But, folks, it's spelled Suidlanders. Is and the it's .org is the website I'm referring you to. It's spelled Suidlanders. And what, Simon, would be the English translation of Suidlanders?
Well, the literal translation is Southlanders, but the metaphorical translation is Southerners.
Okay.
So Southerners and is more correct, really. We wouldn't say in English Southlanders. That would be clumsy. It's really the equivalent is Southerners.
And I remember, of course, I immediately, folks, recognized that that adjective, S-U-I-D, Suid, from my childhood stamp collection, where one of my favorite sets of stamps were those coming from South Africa. And the stamps were issued in two, every stamp, every commemorative stamp was issued in two versions. There was an English version and an Afrikaans version. So you had, you had South Africa on one stamp, and then on the adjoining stamp that was attached to it, the perforation between the two stamps, they were wonderful to collect in sets of two. The adjoining stamp said, Suid-Afrika. And how did you pronounce, in Afrikaans, how do you pronounce Suid-Afrika?
It's just the way you've said it. I must tell you, James, that it's unusual to hear any non-South African, an American or anybody else, English first language but not South African, pronounce it correctly, because that sound is not found in English. So you've done very well. I only know of one other American that I've met in the past 4 months who has pronounced it correctly.
Well, thank you for the flattery.
No, not at all.
Well, I remember
a sound that doesn't exist.
Yes.
Sorry.
Well, I'm just using my ear. So that may come from training as an opera singer. Actually, I would have to sing operas in Italian and German, and so you sing exactly what you hear. So let's proceed with the show, folks. Simon Roach is going to be our guest, and we will have only this bare hour in which to start to open up topics about South Africa. And all of this, you say, well, what does this have to do with a show called The Trump Phenomenon? Does this connect with Donald Trump or the Trump Revolution in America? Oh, it most certainly does, because our revolution here in electing Donald Trump, a patriot, was caused by precisely the sort of thing that's happening in South Africa. And South Africa represents a more advanced stage of the crisis. So that Donald Trump, for instance, when he announced his candidacy on June 16th, 2015, he said, this may be our last chance. And he said, we must control our borders. A nation without borders is not a nation. And we must make America great again. He was referring to preserving and saving our nation from being taken over by other peoples. And what he was forecasting was what we see happening right now in South Africa, where this wonderful population of South African Europeans have lost control of the nation that they built. And they, you know, we've clarified a few things. We started yesterday, Simon, by clarifying that these people, these great European people who settled in South Africa, were not invading somebody else's country. They were not evicting large numbers of any people, blacks or any other kind of people, from their lands. They were even more so, Simon, than we were, our ancestors. You were coming to really virgin land.
Yes, well, approximately 40 to 45% of the country was more or less uninhabited. The only occupants were the small scattered family groups of Aboriginal people, that is to say the what used to be known as the Bushmen and Hottentot and Griqua people, who had been chased out of the more verdant, lush, productive eastern portions of the country by the black-skinned people coming down from Tanzania, and they'd been more or less wiped out and pushed into the arid west of the country. And then, of course, there were some deals that were struck. For example, the whites made a deal with the Xhosa chiefs that the Great Fish River would be in perpetuity the dividing line between the two groups of people, because the Xhosa people had never crossed over the Great Fish River. They were still on the eastern bank. And that deal was broken about nine times, quite manifestly. And so that led to a number of wars, of retribution. You know, the Xhosas would come over and do some bad things to the farmers on the west bank. And that led to some wars. And then, of course, the Mfetane Wars. The Mfetane, it's spelled M-F-E-T-A-N-E, that were caused by the famous King Shaka Zulu, led to the massacre. And of course, we try to use statistics that are conservative, and usually we try to use statistics generated by liberals so that people cannot point a finger at us for lying or exaggerating or what have you. We know that somewhere between one-third and two-thirds of the entire black population of what is modern-day South Africa was killed in those wars. It's unprecedented. There is no equivalent anywhere. It's an absolutely unheard-of thing. But between one-third and two-thirds of those people were killed, and the majority of the liberal sources suggest that it was closer to two-thirds rather than one-third. And so the whites moved into these areas that were unoccupied, and the London Missionary Society, which was bitterly, bitterly opposed to the white people of South Africa, sent many missionaries into those regions, and the records still exist where those missionaries recorded how they did not see any people, that there was just complete eradication of the indigenous populace, and they didn't see people for weeks on end. This is a phenomenon that is never discussed in history. Nobody talks about it, but the records exist. Or the fact that these Zulu wars of depredation led to the massacre of something like two-thirds of all of the black people of South Africa, leaving massive swathes of land completely unoccupied. And whites moved into that area, and then they moved down towards where the Zulus occupied, and they bought a very large tract of land from the Zulus, and a good deal was done, and all parties were happy. And then the Zulu king promptly massacred the whites during a ceremony to conclude the deal, a sort of a feast. And after that, the white people adopted the attitude, well, we've tried to do it the right way. We did it the right way in the Eastern Cape with the Xhosa chiefs on the banks of the Fish River. We tried to do it the right way in Zululand, and it just doesn't work. And then an attitude was adopted, well, then we'll just take whatever we like. Thank you very much. This doing it the humane way simply doesn't work.
Well, you know, and you're being too kind. If I may just interject this, just having, you know, you've inspired me to read, you and your countrymen have inspired me to read up on the history of South Africa. And folks, these South Africans, not only are they very, very tough, they're very understated. They're like tough people. They don't tell you how bad it really was and how bad it really is. The assignment helped me with the pronunciation here of something that's spelled W-E-E-N-E-N. So it looks to us as Weenen. W-E-E-N-E-N. He helped me. The pronunciation, as I remember it, is Vienen.
That's correct. That's perfectly correct. I can't do better than that.
Well, the Vienen massacre, folks, not at supper time, please, and not with children. You need to look it up. The Vienen massacre, W-E-E-N-E-N. It took place on the 17th of February, 1838. And this is right after the massacre that Simon described of the men who were they were celebrating the conclusion of a fair and good deal for both parties, they were impaled, horrible. I'm not going to go into the detail, but you need to look at it at least once in your life. You need to look at the detail so that you understand what the Afrikaners faced. And in the Vienen massacre, it was 41 men, but also 56 women, and most shockingly, 185 children.
That's
all
correct.
Of whom brutally, brutally, savagely, sadistically killed to inflict the absolute most possible suffering, psychological and physical, on all of those people who died. And the Afrikaners then had to, I think, the word Vienen comes actually from the word weeping in Dutch, doesn't it?
Yes, that's correct. Yes, that's where it is. The place of weeping really is the way it's translated, although it really just means weeping. But the place of weeping, because that massacre and one that happened at a similar time, I beg your pardon, called Blokrans, which means blue cliffs. The same thing happened. The men had been killed, as you said. They were trussed up, and they were killed as wizards. In other words, they were killed for witchcraft. Of course, they weren't doing anything remotely like witchcraft. But what has come down through the ages is that the Zulus believed that anybody who rode a horse, obviously we're talking about people who had not yet achieved domestication of animals, anybody that rode a horse, and particularly rode it at night, must be an evil demon. There's another explanation as well, that because they had sticks that shot fire out of them, they were, again, wizards or evil people engaged in witchcraft, and therefore they suffered the punishment that was the punishment of people who participated in witchcraft. They had those, as you say, they were impaled on stakes, and they made the men watch as their sons were impaled first, up through their bottoms, and out through the base of their skulls. And then in Vienen and Blokrans, what happened to the women was that they were gutted, and the children had their brains smashed or their heads smashed against the wagon wheels. This was a very well recorded thing. All of the records from the time indicate that this was universal. It was the punishment, the appropriate punishment to those people in the eyes of the Zulus. So it's not that one or two children or one or two women suffered those terrible fates. That was what was done universally. The women were gutted, and in many cases, fetuses pulled out of their wombs, and those fetuses were then killed separately for traditional reasons of traditional values, traditional religion.
Pardon me, Simon. Hold your thought. We'll be right back, folks.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
I've got so sick and tired of listening to what you got to say. I decided I just got to stand up and say so. Sick and tired of being sick and tired.
We're back, folks. And we've got two-thirds of our show left, in which I hope to say as little as possible and listen as much as possible to Simon Roach, South African patriot, who is a young man. I think you told me you were 49 years old, Simon?
46.
46 years old, younger yet. And the he is on a tour of the United States, which will go on for several months more. And we in the American Freedom Party, you just heard our ad in which we talk about the danger of being replaced in our own country, of being overwhelmed by a flood of people. The and, you know, we made mistakes very similar to the mistakes that our cousins in South Africa made. Naively, both peoples thought, well, we could import. In America, we imported about 300,000 black slaves to America. And those became the 10% of our population, which has been black historically. And we had reached a very good accommodation with that 10% of our population. And we had a very viable structure to our country until we lost control. The invasion began when we lost control of our borders. And then the flood of tens of millions of people from every part of the third world started coming into our country. Well, the same thing has happened in South Africa. Naively, the South Africans, and correct me, Simon, if I say anything, misstate anything, South Africans thought that they too could share their land with a population brought in to do labor and things of this sort, and they have now lost completely control of their borders and control of their government. And there's a population explosion going on in South Africa right now, where in the same way that America is, everyone in the world seems to want to get into America and get part of the, get a piece of America.
Yes.
Well, in South Africa, you know, for all of the tales of horror that you hear from South Africa, there are, as bad as it is, it's better than it is in the Central African Republic. It's better than it is in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. It's better than, you know, it is in, so there are tens of millions of Africans, black Africans, who want to invade South Africa. So that I'm looking at your population figures right now, Simon, and I know that these, I've had other South Africans tell me these numbers are probably wildly understated because they've lost control of the numbers. But in 2011, South Africa is listed as having 52 million people. 3 years, 4 years later, in 2015, the number has jumped to 55 million. Jumping at the rate of a million a year.
Yes, yes. It's a phenomenal thing. You know, it's another one of these things that the liberal mainstream media has managed to keep out of the public discourse altogether. They've done a fantastic job. They deserve credit because they really have done well. You know, this the black population of South Africa was in about 1903 approximately 2 million. In 1950, in a very famous census that was done, a very renowned census in the history of our country, a very thorough census for political reasons, it was done especially thoroughly, the population had risen to 5 million. And in 1994, that black African population of South Africa had gone up to 40 million. So that is a 20-fold increase in about 90 years, which is about 3.5 generations in sociological terms, about 3.5 generations. It's a phenomenal thing. It's an unheard of thing. It's an incredible thing, but it's a fact. You know, to go from 2 to 40 is an uncommon, increase.
And Simon,
of course, that was, yes.
Pardon me for interrupting you. In 1950, as I understand you to say that there were 5 million blacks in South Africa, what was the white population at that time?
It was about 2 million. It was just over 2 million, about 2.1 million.
So at that moment, white South Africans constituted a third of the country, and and of course you gave us a number yesterday that the current white population about 4.7 million.
Yes, we can't be certain because the Department of Statistics is notoriously inept when it comes to mathematics, but that's what we believe it to be.
Yes, and folks, I think I hear a little music, Simon. So we'll take a break and be right back.
Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Do you or someone you know suffer from chest pain, blood pressure, cholesterol, or irregular heartbeat? Are you looking for a more natural solution to overcome these health challenges? You hear the ads all the time. If this stuff's so good, why doesn't my doctor prescribe it? That's easy. Doctors are not trained in natural medicine. Extendivite Heart Tonic does want you to be as healthy as you can be, and it really works. Take Extendivite for 6 months and your doctor will say, I don't know what you're doing, but don't stop. It's working for you. Get the dependability of Extendivite. Just see how you feel in 6 months. A 2 month supply of either capsules or liquid is only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite. It's time for you to have your own custom smartphone app for your business and pay way less than you can imagine. Introducing the I Can Get To Silent Salesman mobile marketing app, a global mobile marketing and communication tool for your business. Go to appsapart.com and learn how you could earn up to $36,351 or more per month just by inviting two people or less into a $14.95 per month program. Go to appsapart.com and be sure to watch the video at the top of the site and listen to the audio message from the CEO near the bottom. This is something you won't want to miss. Go to appsapart.com now or call 646-860-9540. That's 646-860-9540. Get the I Can Get To. That's ICANGET, the number 2, Silent Salesman app at appsapart.com. That's appsapart.com.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Why don't we liberate these United States? We're the ones who need it worst. Let the rest of the world help us for change, and let's rebuild America first. Our highways and bridges are falling apart.
We're back, folks.
Who has been cursed?
Our guest is Simon Roach. And Simon spells his last name R-O-C-H-E. His website, you must visit this website, is Soitlanders.org. Soitlanders.org. And Simon, what I have been doing, on this show, drawing parallels between our cousins in South Africa and ourselves. In many ways, wouldn't it be wonderful, folks, to be able to see into the future, to have a time machine in which you could go forward? Well, you have that time machine on your radio right now in Simon Roach. He is living in your future, depending on what we do. What South Africans needed in 1994, I'll just offer my thought, was a Donald Trump. In that election in 1994, somebody who could see into the future how catastrophic it would be for white South Africans to give up their own sovereignty, to give up their control over their own fate. And the you know, what we face, it may seem, you know, impossible, Simon, but it's actually true. Our forecast, our immigration invasion is so great right now that we are facing becoming ourselves, white America, a minority in this country in which we were 91% of the population for most of our history. That only, that other fraction being simply the blacks who were brought over as slaves in the number of 300,000. And we are facing, in my lifetime, becoming a minority, and certainly in the lifetime of my children, becoming a minority in our own country. And folks, you know, at the point that you become a minority, you have effectively lost political control of your future. And these other peoples, you know, you've been very kind-hearted, you know, which is typical of your people, Simon, in your description of why the coming up with a reason for the Zulus butchering your people and so on. I would come up with less charitable reasons, you know, that they thought that you were very charitable in saying, well, they considered them to be wizards and witches and so on. And I would be much less charitable, and I would refer to terms. Our president, this is remarkable. We've never had a president since Calvin Coolidge who would use the phrase the civilized world. But Donald Trump has frequently in his speeches said, you know, this, that, or the other concerning the civilized world. This is politically incorrect to use these words.
Yes.
Well, you know, the Afrikaners were encountering the uncivilized world. And so the treatment they got was not the result of any, you know, any kind-hearted explanation. It was what happens when the civilized world encounters the uncivilized world. Horrors like those at Vienna in 1838 ensue. And, of course, now... Yes, go ahead, Simon.
Sorry, I beg your pardon. I just wanted to offer two illustrative anecdotes on that point that you're making. You know, in the 1950s, I forget the exact date, but I believe that it was 1955. I could be mistaken. Nelson Mandela was recorded as saying, I don't know if I can say this on your station, but I must insist that I'm quoting him verbatim. We are going to fuck the whites out of South Africa. In other words, we are going to, through sheer growth, the growth that we are able to achieve, have not been able to achieve over thousands of years without the benefits of clean running water and electricity and surplus production of food and so on and so forth. We are going to use this instrument as one of the instruments through which we defeat these people. And I think that is should be a lesson to everyone. You know, we don't all share the same aspirations all of the time. I'll give you another example. 2 years ago, a group of knotty-haired liberals in Johannesburg came up with an idea for eradicating the rats in a certain township in Johannesburg. And the idea was to put owls in the township and for the owls to, you know, obviously prey on the rats at night. And after a few weeks...
Simon, I'm guessing what happened to the owls.
Well, yes, but... you can imagine, I suppose you're on the money already, but these owls turned up dead, some of the owls, and at the last minute they tried to save the last owl. I think they rescued one of 13 owls and the other 12 were killed. But what was done to them is that they were caught and they had their eyes plucked out while they were alive before being killed. Because in the traditional African belief paradigm, an owl is a very evil creature with an ability to identify bad deeds that are being done and to transport them into the spirit world from whence they can be transported to other places. So in other words, the general idea is if you have a policeman who is going to his witch doctor regularly and keeping up with his traditional medicine, and he's in tune with the spirits, this hypothetical black policeman, then it may be that the spirits whisper in his ear
you know, ultimately via these owls, that somebody has been doing bad things, maybe murder, rape, or whatever. So you get the owl, you don't kill it first, you pluck its eyes out, and then kill it. And this illustrates a vast gulf that is almost irreconcilable between certain peoples. And I hope that perhaps many Americans might begin to understand that the simple reality is that many of the people who are coming to the USA do not and never will share the values of this civilization.
Well, and here's another encouraging parallel between our South African and our American situations. Donald Trump has spoken the completely forbidden language mm-hmm. that you're describing, Simon, when he talks about nobody was talking about MS-13, which is this incredibly savage gang from Central America, which prides itself on killing people, especially with knives. They really, and they're utterly sadistic and torturing. They initiate people by murder. And Donald Trump was the first politician to say, "We're getting these people out of our country, all of them. Yeah. They're going now." And you know, this is what. Common sense, but Donald Trump recognizing that this is not, we do not need to do counseling for these people or hold their hands, which is what Barack Hussein Obama wanted to do. He thought, you know, kumbaya is, you know, an American word meaning, you know, just dreaming, living in a fantasy world. Donald Trump lives in the real world and recognizes that these people are savage and that they have to leave our country. And regaining control of our borders. But let me make another point here. There is, of course, folks, a contrast, a gap. You know, South Africa being into a future that we hope to avoid. And that is that our white cousins in South Africa have now become a very distinct minority. So there are two things that come to mind. Number one, no matter what their minority status. However minoritarian they may be, we, their cousins, have an absolute moral obligation to do everything we can to save them, to rescue them, to help them, especially as they see what they regard as help or rescue. So in other words, that does not mean it's our moral duty to just to, you know, get them out of South Africa and so on. No, that's not what they may want to do. That is their country. It's been their country for 400 years. It's as much their home as America is our home. If somebody told me, well, Kelso, look, the immigration situation is getting really bad. You're going to have to go back to Scotland, my friend. Well, no, I don't want to go back to Scotland. America is my home. And that's am I right, Simon, in saying that's exactly how you South Africans see your country?
Absolutely, that is the way that we see it, James. You know, our forefathers fought and died for the privilege of being able to build a world-class society. You know, South Africa during the 1980s produced more clean running water than all of the other 51 countries of Africa put together. It's not possible for one to beat 51. It doesn't happen. Real life doesn't work like that. But that is what happened. South Africa also produced more electricity than the other 51 countries of Africa put together. South Africa had more paved or tarred roads, asphalt roads, than the other 51 countries of Africa put together. People sweated to build something noble and good and true. We are not callous people. We are not people who wish to see suffering come on the heads of our children. I have children. I have three sons. And the last thing in the world that I want is for them to be caught up in a conflict. Nevertheless, I am not going to run away because that is tantamount to capitulating to barbarianism.
My goodness, you know, yours is such an admirable people. And folks, coming to their aid, Donald Trump may be the man of the hour here. Donald Trump is just beginning his presidency. I don't know how familiar he is. I hope someone in his administration is listening to this program. How familiar is Donald Trump with the plight of his cousins in South Africa. And through shows like this, through Simon Roach's tour, through books like that of Paul Fromm, which is in production, and we'll get a copy of that book on Donald Trump's desk. I can promise you that, Simon. Donald Trump is a man of yes, and he's a man of character. He will appoint an ambassador. I don't believe he's appointed an ambassador yet to South Africa.
No.
The he will create a policy towards South Africa, which we can be assured it will not be anything like Barack Obama's, which was, I think Barack Obama's policy was whatever the ANC wants, they get.
Of course.
And I mean, Barack Obama might as well have been a lifetime member of the ANC. A status that continues to this day. So the Donald Trump can really, and now this is a point of hope here, because of the size and the power of America, if Donald Trump mobilizes his administration to help your people in South Africa, Simon, amazing things could happen very, very quickly. Just a few phone calls from Donald Trump to whoever is at the time running the ANC, those phone calls could be very, very powerful indeed. We're talking about an awful lot of power here. And so a lot of protection could be offered to your people. And I think Donald Trump is the kind of man who would do that. And I would include all kinds of protection, military protection, economic protection, using the levers of power very effectively. So we've got, we can be confident that Donald Trump will be reelected in 2020. We've got now 7 years and 7 months left in the Trump administration. And I think we ought to look upon those 7 years and 7 months, folks, as a long opportunity in which we can do wonderful things in all areas of life. But let's focus right here on our cousins in South Africa. And and of course, I'll tell you, Simon, we here in America, we did not see Donald Trump coming. We were bracing ourselves. We'd had two terms. You must have been shocked in South Africa when we elected Barack Obama, a communist.
It was incomprehensible to us because it didn't seem to make any sense. In terms of merit, I understand that, you know, democracy in any part of the world is really an exercise in populism, and it's government by the lowest common denominator. So anything is possible, but in terms of merit, it just seems, I don't know, it didn't make sense to us.
Yeah, and to us it seemed crazy also. And it created despair in us because, you know, we patriots going, not only did we elect this communist, he is a communist. Barack Obama is not shy about it. All of his training is as a communist. Saul Alinsky is his mentor.
Mm-hmm.
This is like who was Mandela's mentor in South Africa? He was Joe Slovo.
Yes.
Well,
Nelson Mandela himself was a. You know, this came out immediately after his death. About 2 weeks later, some of his peers, not just one person, a couple or a few of his peers, admitted that Nelson Mandela had always been and had never stopped being and had remained a member of the Central Committee of the South African Communist Party up to the day of his death. He was a Marxist through and through. He went to the churches, you know, at Easter time and Christmas, and he would come out with a great big beaming smile and stand on the steps and talk about Jesus Christ and what an example and this, that, and the next thing. But it turned out that we'd been beguiled, tricked, gulled, all along.
Yes, and folks, you have to read it to believe it, but Nelson Mandela was confined to quarters by white South Africa in country club conditions. he was not a martyr or a prisoner really in any way. His crimes for which he was not really tried, you know, many, many people went to their deaths because of the work of Mandela, absolute communist terrorism. But let's getting back to the point of Obama, we had two administrations of Obama. So, and then really, you know, at the darkest hour, this man, Donald Trump, appears. And you mentioned that there's prophecy in among Afrikaners about a white president succeeding a black president, you know, with hair that seemed like a wig.
Yes.
When was this prophecy made?
100 years ago, a very highly respected, deeply pious man with a terrific reputation for divine foresight, if you like, described how shortly prior to a terrible cataclysm in the world.
Okay. Stop right there at the cataclysm. Okay. And we'll finish the story after this break.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
NutraMedical's Calm Mind supports a relaxed mood and helps to support your brain neurotransmitter, helps lower blood pressure, helps to make you feel calm all day long, and helps to make it easier to go to sleep. Calm Mind contains GABA. It also contains xanthine and L-theanine, an amino acid from green tea. And it contains myo-inositol, a special B vitamin. Because it's such high quality, it works amazingly for anxiety, panic attack, and for depression. Get Calm Mind at NutriMedical.com, NutriMedical.com, or 888-212-8871. The special studies that have been done on Calm Mind show that it helps to stabilize the neurons in the brain, lower the autonomic nervous system that raises blood pressure, and it helps to support normal calming activity throughout the body. That means you're going to have much higher energy level, much more stable mood, be able to tolerate stress better, and it helps to stabilize blood sugar as well. So order Calm Mind at NutriMedical.com.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you one of them from Amazon.com. I was diagnosed with high blood pressure. I was a little bit alarmed, as I have always been in good health. I started this regime as soon as it arrived, and I have noted that the heaviness in my chest is gone and the pressure headaches I have been having are lessened. I am hoping to see greater results as time progresses, as I am an avid non-user of pharmaceuticals and avoid them at all cost if possible. This was, I think, a great alternative to heart medication. Not that I am a doctor, and for some, there is no choice, but again, for someone like me, I am so far pleased with the results. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Back, folks. We're in our last segment, and I'm going to give an apology to Mark in Georgia. Mark, who's holding on the line, we may not get to your call, but we just have a few minutes left. Simon Roach, our guest. We're talking about, and you can help me again here with the Afrikaans pronunciation of von Rensburg, and I believe this is the man you're talking about.
Yes, his name was Nicolaas von Rensburg, colloquially referred to as Oom Sina von Rensburg, which means Uncle Sia, as in the sense of prophet. And he prophesied that at a time of just prior to a great cataclysm in the world,
Well, let me put it another way. He said that there would be a civil war in South Africa, a final civil war, which would be fought between the races of South Africa. And he said that simultaneous to that, there would be a war between the USA and Russia. Now, 100 years ago, that would be like me saying that the Fourth World War will be fought between Peru and Cambodia. You know, it was a time when the USA was not one of the great warrior nations of the world. Of course, you know, that it was the Europeans who were forever murdering one another.
And
Russia
that,
was...
Yes, I'm noticing for our audience that von Rensburg folks lived from 1864 to 1926. Go ahead, continue, Simon.
Right, and of course Russia was a decrepit empire, but he made this astonishing, improbable prophecy that the USA and Russia, of all countries, would fight a third civil war, and I won't go into all the details because I know that there's not much time left, but he famously said that they would use weapons so terrible that he could not describe them, and he couldn't write, so his daughter, who wrote everything down, said, my father said that he doesn't have the words to describe how terrible are these weapons that the USA and Russia would use against one another. And
connect this now to the appearance of Trump after Obama. How does that fit in?
Well, his friend said to him, look, if you make prophecies like this, such terrible prophecies, the very least that you can do is give people some sort of route markers, some milestones, some indicators of when these things will happen. And he said, he gave many, many various ones, we can speak about them another day, many of them pertaining particularly to the USA, but the one that you're asking after is where he said that it will be that there is a black male president who misleads the country, misleads and disorientates the country. And then he specifically said, pivots the USA to the east. So you can imagine for us in 2012, when Barack Obama gave his speech about the great pivot of the USA to the east, it was like the fulfillment of the prophecy was unbelievable.
And then he prophesied who would follow.
He said that the reins of leadership of the USA would be taken over by a white male. And the point being, of course, that our elders in our organization and in our culture, who are familiar with this stuff, were all saying Donald Trump will win, Donald Trump will win, Donald Trump will win, while the rest of us, me included, thought that it was absolutely impossible. He said then that this man would have a plush scale teeth, and that means hair resembling a wig.
Wow. This is amazing. It's a good point on which to end, Simon. As always, the invitation is out to you every night on this show. Do you think you might want to come back tomorrow night?
I would like that very much. It would be my honor, James.
Well, the honor is ours, and folks, return for the next episode of this amazing story tomorrow night. So long.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
About 6 months ago, my wife bought Extendivite. She didn't tell me she was giving it to me. So after about 3 days, I said, maybe the weather's changed or something. I said, my legs feel really good. And she goes, well, I've been giving you this stuff, and it was the Extendivite. And you know that I'm about 75% better. I can actually climb stairs now, and I can get up out of chairs. I can even get down and, you know, I got to work under a table or a computer table and work on a computer. I can actually get back up off the floor. You know what? It's an amazing product. I didn't think anything short of having surgery was going to help.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.